Sing a song for Benjamin Linder. Sing a song for his family and friends while he was building a dam in the country. Contras, they came, they murdered him with
guns, 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 that our taxes pay for. Guns, guns, guns that the U.S. sends.
Today, we know a lot about how Ben Linder was murdered. Ben Linder died, as many others have died in Nicaragua. He was a civilian target. He was wounded, and he was then executed. He died like his companions, Sergio Hernandez and Pablo Rosales.
Ben had spent a couple months surveying streams in the area to see which one would be what he thought the best to plan the next small hydroelectric plant. And he picked this particular site because it was near the town of San Jose de Bocay, where there was a small military garrison, and he felt it would therefore be safer than one in a more remote area.
He always had that ability to try to break that sharp edge of who's better and who's worse. Where that fit into his life, I don't know, but he kept that going, and he tried to always help the ones who needed a little help in moving forward.
Ben was not afraid to plunge in and get his hands dirty with life, with making the world a better place.
April 28th will be the 25th anniversary of the death of Ben Linder. Ben was a Portland engineer working to bring electricity to rural areas of Nicaragua when he was murdered by U.S.-backed Contra forces. He was the first American killed by the Contras, and his death ignited a storm of protest throughout the country. Tonight on Circle A Radio, we listen to audio recorded in 1987 and 1989, celebrating the life of Ben Linder and discussing the U.S. policies in place in Central America at that time. Stay tuned.
In the summer of 1983, a 23-year-old American named Ben Linder arrived in Managua with a unicycle and a newly earned degree in engineering. In 1986, Linder moved from Managua to El Cuá, a village in the Nicaraguan war zone, where he helped form a team to build a hydro plant to bring electricity to the town. In April 1987, he was ambushed and killed by the Contras.
On September 25th, 26th, and 27th, in 1987, the conference in the spirit of Ben Linder took place, organized by 24 local groups, including the still-functioning Portland Central America Solidarity Committee. The conference featured workshops and speakers focused on U.S. policy in Central America, with all proceeds going to the Ben Linder Memorial Fund. Our first audio tonight is from that conference. We'll hear from members of the Linder family, but first, this is Millie Thayer from the Portland Central America Solidarity Committee. She worked with Ben in Nicaragua for a year.
On behalf of the 24 organizations sponsoring this event, I'd like to welcome you to the conference in the spirit of Ben Linder. Ben's death was felt all over the country, but because Portland was his hometown and because of our connection to the Linder family, it hit especially hard here. So in the midst of our grief and our anger last spring, the idea of this conference was conceived. It is intended as a forum for exploring the issues about U.S. foreign policy toward Central America raised by Ben's death. But more than that, it's meant to be and is a tribute to Ben's life and a reaffirmation of our commitment to work in his spirit for peace and justice in Central America. Ben Linder and I became friends in the fall of 1984 when I went to Nicaragua to live. His warmth and friendly face meant a lot to me when I arrived as a newcomer. We were fellow members of the Committee of U.S. Citizens Living in Nicaragua, where his humor and enthusiasm lightened many a long meeting. When I think of his spirit, I think of one particular image. It was a blistering hot day when I went to help him dig a vegetable garden behind the place where he worked. It was a period of time when the fighting in the mountains had made it very dangerous to continue harvesting the food crops to feed people in the cities. And the government had urged individuals and workplaces to plant vegetable gardens to grow food for their people. And in Ben's case, many of the middle-class engineers that he worked with were not interested in digging up an overgrown field in the hot sun. But Ben was ready to do his part. And it might have been because his many trips up north to the town of Elkwa, where he was building a dam for hydroelectric power, had shown him the hardships of life in the war zone, and he felt it was the least he could do. At any rate, the image that sticks in my mind is of Ben with his sleeves rolled up, his boots caked with mud, his pitchfork in hand, and a huge grin on his face because he just got a shipment of organic carrot seeds from his family in Oregon. Ben was not afraid to plunge in and get his hands dirty with life, with making the world a better place. And that's the spirit that we're here to celebrate. I want to introduce several people here who may be responsible for some of that spirit. The Linder family has a special place in our community. David and Elizabeth, Ben's parents, are longtime activists for peace. David in the Portland Corinto Sister City Association, and Elizabeth in the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, among other organizations. Both of them, since Ben's death, along with Ben's sister Miriam and his brother John, have been on a national tour speaking out against US intervention in Nicaragua and raising funds to help complete Ben's project in Elkwa. We're glad to have them home, at least for now. And I'd like to ask you to welcome them, David and Elizabeth Linder and Miriam Linder.
That was Millie Thayer. Next, we have David Linder, Ben's father.
Welcome. Don't know what to say past that. As I think back on Ben, and he's very familiar to me, he's very familiar to many people here, but let me just review who he is, was, and give some perspective to who this fellow is and perhaps give some direction to the conference from that. Ben was born in 1959 in San Francisco. Those were good years for him, and those were good years for us. We learned about what it means to believe in something, participate in something in our own way. And Ben was just a little kid at that time, but he did join us. And he, I think, learned that it was all right and right and proper to participate in what you believed in, and when you did, you weren't alone. Because in San Francisco at that time, during the Vietnam War period, we were with tremendous number of good people in San Francisco. The majority of the city poured out. And so our individual inclinations, our feelings, were part of the community, and we knew it there. And I think Ben took that with him, that belief in what he believed in, the community believed in also. And we came to Portland, and in Portland attended primary school, but I think perhaps the more interesting central areas was when he went to Adams High School in southeast Portland, and he elected to go there because they had a program where there was more individual expression. When he went there, he was within a school within a school. There were a large number of peoples from varying walks of life, and including a lot of big fellas. And Ben was short, very slight, and not a fighting type. And there, for whatever resources he had, he was able to live and work among the biggest and toughest, and to keep his self-respect, to know when to retreat, to know when to go forward and keep on going. In the midst of it, he had a somewhat uncanny ability to laugh at peoples who were overachievers in their own way. What I mean by that, at one point he participated in the competitive selection of the Princess of the Rose Festival at the school and had a good time with it. He wasn't elected. And I think also I remember the days when he was active on a chess team. It was the only chess team in Portland that didn't practice between competitive games. And he just loved playing. And he just loved the sport, and it didn't matter whether he won or lost, he just liked it. And that was very much a part of him and his. And he always had that ability to try to break that sharp edge of who's better and who's worse. Where that fit into his life, I don't know, but he kept that going, and he tried to always help the ones who needed a little help in getting moving forward. When he went to college, he engineer, of course, and he was interested there in, again, helping people who were weak, who had incapacities, and he was interested in entering the program there to build gadgets so that they could enhance what abilities they did have. And that was very much a part of Ben also. He did challenge himself, and he did it in his own way, in his own time, and perhaps the best example of that is when he drove his unicycle down the coast road, the US 1, from the Canadian border down to Santa Barbara all by himself. And he did it, and he liked it, it was fun, and I think most everything he did with a sense of humor and a kind of enjoyment. And so that's the way he went and expressed himself. One thing that he was part of during that period was the concept of consensus decision making. I think this came to the forefront in 1977. This is when he was still in high school, when the first sit-in at the Trojan nuclear facility upstream from Portland. And there, all the decisions were made by group consensus. It was something new to me, something new to him, and something which took a while for me to sink in to my own thinking and my own understanding of how decisions could and should be made. And he was very much a part of that. I don't think he ever lost that facility and sense of values when he went on in life, because in Nicaragua, many and most of the decisions made by the central government are made by consensus decision making. And in his own area, one thing is so clear is he never ran ahead of his interference. As he worked up in the El Cuabocay area, he never went ahead of the people from the community, where he always worked with them in their own pace. And if he was known for anything, was somebody who could live and work with the campesinos in the area. One of the most lovely stories about Ben and his development comes from Larry Colton, one of his teachers in high school. And there he said, isn't it interesting that with regard to Ben, the smallest in the class ended up by being standing the tallest. And I think this in many ways is very much a part of Ben and characterizes him, his life, and the meaning of this conference. And so I think that's all I want to say. I think Elizabeth wants to talk now about Ben as seen by Elizabeth.
You are listening to Circle A Radio as we remember and celebrate the life of Ben Linder on the 25th anniversary of his murder by the U.S.-backed Contras in Nicaragua. This is Elizabeth Linder, Ben's mother. She was showing slides while talking.
On April 28th of this year, Ben and six Nicaraguan co-workers went to a small stream 1 mile outside of the little town of San Jose de Bocay in northern Nicaragua. They'd been going there for 4 days in a row, taking measurements at this particular stream. Ben had spent a couple months surveying streams in the area to see which one would be what he thought the best to plan the next small hydroelectric plant. And he picked this particular site because it was near the town of San Jose de Bocay, where there was a small military garrison. And he felt it would therefore be safer than one in a more remote area. He was very anxious to go every day. It was at the very end of the dry season, and what they had to do is take the measurements when there was the least amount of water in the stream in order to know how to design the plant, the generator, so that there would always be power coming even when there was very little water. On Tuesday morning, they went as always. They got there about 8 in the morning. It took them about an hour to get there from the town. And one of the men was bringing the cement. It was to be the first day of construction of a small dam called a weir for taking further flow measurements. There were 7 of them, Ben and 6 Nicaraguan co-workers. And a group of about 12 Contras ambushed them. Ben was wounded by shrapnel from a grenade, wounded in the back of his legs, had a wound in his left forearm, and then he was executed by a bullet to his right temple, fired from somewhere between 2 inches and 2 feet distance. Pablo Rosales, who was also wearing civilian clothes, was also wounded and then killed by stab wounds to his chest. And Sergio Hernandez was also killed by a bullet. Our government refers to this group of people working on a small hydroelectric plant, and the Contras have said that they knew they were working on a small hydroelectric plant, that they ambushed them and they killed them. Our government calls that a military target. The slides that you will see, many of them were taken by Ben and his co-worker Mira Brown before they came to the United States about a year ago, last August. They came to do some fundraising for the Quabocay Development Project, and they had taken these slides to show what the area is like and to show what the small plant that Ben had been working on and completed was like. So many of the slides are slides that Ben and Mira Brown took. As David said, Ben was a mechanical engineer. He had gone to the University of Washington in Seattle. And while there, besides becoming a mechanical engineer, he also became, what you see on the slide, a clown, a juggler, and a unicyclist. I think that was maybe not quite as important to him as the engineering, but pretty close. That was June. In August of 83 of that year, He had gone to Costa Rica the year before and went to language school to learn Spanish and took a couple trips into Nicaragua, basically to job hunt. He came home and said, well, he had a few not hard and fast offers, but people who said that they might be able to hire him and might want to hire him after graduation the year after. So he was very pleased with himself, I think. Anybody entering their senior year with a possibility of a job at the end of that year is pretty excited. So in August of 83, he packed his backpack full of engineering books and took his unicycle and went to Nicaragua. When Ben first went down, he got a job with a Nicaraguan Energy Institute, INE, which is their public utility, quite quickly, but his work papers were not in order, and it took about 3 months. So in the meantime, he worked and played with the Nicaraguan circus. On one parade, he met a woman, Diana, who does a puppet show on Nicaraguan television. And he told her he was looking for a place to live, and she said, oh, why don't you move in with us? My father's off doing military service, and so is my brother, so there's lots and lots and lots of room. So Ben said, okay, this is the house where he lived for many, many months. At some point when Rodolfo came back from military service, Ben said, well, you know, I'd better move out. And they said, what do you mean move out? Well, there's lots of room, you can't move out. Rodolfo just came back, he wants to get to know you too. And then Franklin, the son, came back and Ben again sort of made motions about moving and they said, you know, you can't move. I mean, don't you like it here? You have to stay. And in February of 84, Ben's brother John went down to pick some coffee with a brigade and to visit Ben, basically. And Ben walked out of the house and said, see you later, I'm looking for a room for my brother. And you can probably guess what they said. They said, you know, your brother can't stay anywhere else. He has to stay with us too. So they put up a sheet between the ironing board and the bed, and that was Ben's room. And I'm not exactly sure where John was, but he stayed there for a couple of months also. We visited Ben that Christmas, so he had just been there about 4 or 5 months, and he had just started work about a month before we got there. And when we were there, he mentioned that there was a small hydroelectric plant being built in the north in El Qua. That was the first time I ever heard that name. It was being built by the Energy Institute, and he was interested in looking at it. It had been started but not completed. And we asked him whether he thought it was dangerous up there since it was the north. And he said, well, yeah, it could be dangerous, but he was going to look anyway. And in February of 84, he went up to El Qua for the first time. And my sense is that he sort of fell in love with that small plant. Engineers from the Energy Institute had gone up. They started that plant and started the building of the dam and all of that in 81. And engineers would go up and work for a while and come back down to Managua and not go back. Life in El Qua was very, very difficult. There were no facilities, there was no electricity, there was no drinking, no running water, and so on and so forth. And besides, there were hardly any tools available, and if anything ever broke, you had to go back to Managua, which was a 6 to 7 hour drive, at first over a dirt road and then a paved road, but still, sometimes dangerous. So most of the engineers didn't particularly want to stay there. And I think maybe that was something that made Ben feel excited about it also. He just was determined to work on it and complete it. This is what the area looks like. It's very lush. It's perhaps in some ways reminiscent of Oregon. Very green, very lush, with a lot of steep gullies and mountains. These are the women of El Qua who in 1970, under the Somoza dictatorship, were arrested and held and tortured because they would not reveal the whereabouts of their husbands, brothers, fathers, who were active in the resistance against Somoza. Men would be taken up in helicopters and interrogated by the Somoza National Guard. And whether they revealed information or not, they would be dumped out of the helicopters. These are the women of El Qua, memorialized in a poem by Ernesto Cardenal, the present Minister of Culture. And there is, a coffee warehouse, which is also named for the women of El Qua. This is a farm in the region. It used to be a private coffee farm and is now owned and run by about 50 families as a cooperative. The National Development Bank of El Qua, with its parking lot. The function of the bank is to make very, very low interest loans to the local peasants and farmers so that they can buy seed and fertilizer and other necessities. There, you know, if a farmer has a bad year and can't repay the loan or can't pay the interest, the loan is frequently extended, sometimes even forgiven. There is no such thing as foreclosure as we hear in our country. One of the reasons for this kind of activity is that the government wants to make these areas, particularly the remote areas, as self-sufficient as possible so that people do not depend on the cities and imports from the cities or imports from other countries, and also so that they don't have to depend on the cities for jobs. They don't want everyone from the countryside coming to the cities for jobs. This is the main street of El Cua. The building on the left is the health clinic, the health center, and the building on the right is the school, and you can see a class going on outside there. Most of the people in the area did not know how to read or write before the literacy campaign, which was instituted by the government in 1980. This is what the El Cua plant looked like when Ben first went up in February of 84. And this is what it looked like after he had worked on it. And in the video, which we sometimes show and which Lois Wessel was going to show, there's a wonderful section. Jeff Hart from Salem did some video for Ben at the plant last year. And there's a section that I really like because Ben describes where each part comes from. There's a part that's donated by Sweden, and there's a part that's donated by the United Nations, and there's this and that. And then he sort of lovingly pats one of these things and says, and this is something that was built in 1929. It's old, it's heavy, it works, and we've had no problems with it. This is the dam for that plant. And the causeway that takes the water around to the generator. This also gives you a good idea of somehow the countryside, the fog. I can't explain to you what part of the system this is, but what's important to me is the man who is welding something there. That is Donald McClay, who has lived in Canada. He's a machinist, American, who's lived in Canada some time. And he used to teach in a mechanics school in Managua. Ben used to ask him for help, help repairing things, help manufacturing parts. And eventually, Don McClay went up to El Cua and worked with Ben and did a lot of the teaching. Part of making the area self-sufficient includes teaching the local people how to maintain the equipment and repair it and hopefully eventually manufacture their own. Donald had left late in March of this spring and went to Europe. He went to Italy with the idea that he was going to write a book and figure out what he wanted to do next with his life. When he heard that Ben had been killed, he raised the money for his airfare back to Nicaragua, and he's back working on the Quabocay project. The lights went on in El Cua in November of 85, and the plant was formally dedicated on May 1st of 1986, just a year before Ben was killed. When the lights first went on, the switches had not yet been installed, so the lights, obviously this is a picture taken in the middle of the day with lots of sunshine, but the lights went on and people were happy and they just stayed on until switches were installed and they could be turned off. This is the health center, and one of the things of having electricity in El Cua now means that they can refrigerate vaccines and medicines. They used to have an emergency diesel generator, but frequently fuel would not be available because the road was impassable or for whatever other reasons. This is part of the teaching to maintain the local equipment. It's a course in very basic electricity. Hilda is the woman in the dark dress. I think the woman in the light dress was going to be the third plant operator, but her father was killed in an attack fairly close, and she has gone back into town to live with her mother. This is the El Cua ambulance. It says Health Center, El Cua, Ministry of Health, and the physician, Carlos. It's very clearly marked as an ambulance. The holes are bullet holes. I think this is the second of three ambulances that have been attacked in the area. And in one of the attacks, both the driver and the passenger were killed. This is a jeep that went over a landmine and a bridge that was destroyed by the Contras. And these are the kinds of targets that they pick on. They try to destroy what they can of the infrastructure of the region and make life as difficult as possible for the civilian population. If the bridge is down, foodstuffs can't come in, cooking oil can't come in, fertilizer and seeds can't come in, and life essentially stops. This is a very frequent scene in the area. It's a funeral of a child. This is my last slide. And this is a militia unit on guard duty. And the reason I show this is to talk about the difference between the regular army, the regular military, which indeed exists and needs to exist to defend the country. But the militia are just ordinary people. They could be you and they could be me, who take their turn guarding their communities, their stores, their families, their homes. People do this after they've put in a whole day of work.
You are listening to Circle A Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. We are commemorating the life of Ben Linder, Portland engineer working to bring electricity to rural areas of Nicaragua when he was murdered 25 years ago by U.S.-backed Contra forces. This audio was recorded by KBOO volunteers in 1987 and 1989. This is Ben Linder's sister, Miriam, speaking at the conference In the Spirit of Ben Linder in September of 1987.
My first trip to Nicaragua was the day after Ben was killed, and we were there for a week at the time of his funeral. Ben's life ended then on April 28th, and in many ways my life ended and I began a new life. So we were in Nicaragua for one very difficult week and then came back here to Portland. I knew as soon as I was back here, that I had to go back to Nicaragua as soon as I could. So many things had begun then. I had met Ben's friends. I had begun to understand his work and the importance of it. So the first that I could go back was in July. In some ways, I picked the date because Ben had picked the date. When I spoke with him in April, a couple weeks before he was killed, I asked him when he was coming home next to visit. And he said, in August. And I said, why August? He said, well, it's the soonest I can come. I really want to go to the July 19th celebration with Don Cosme, who's the old man he lived with in El Qua. July 19th is the anniversary of the triumph of the Nicaraguan Revolution. This year, July 19th, was the 8th anniversary of the triumph of the Nicaraguan Revolution. So I let Ben's time frame be mine and went for that celebration on July 19th. What I was thinking before I went was that I was going to be closer to Ben. That's why I was going. And that happened in many, many ways. Ben is buried in the city of Matagalpa, the capital of Region 6 in which he worked, where many of his friends live and work. He's buried in a beautiful cemetery up on the hill overlooking the valley of Matagalpa. At the time when we buried him, as Mom said in speaking about the work he was doing when he was killed, it was the end of the dry season in the end of April, and the rains began the day after his funeral, the 1st of May. It's very green there right now. So he was buried, but his grave had no marker. It had a numbered marker that they put on to keep track and a mound. And when you went into the cemetery, you just start walking up the hill, and pretty soon all the kids from the neighborhood just across the ravine, they'd see you and come running over and ask what grave you're looking for, and they could tell you any one of them, and they could certainly tell you Ben's grave. And so I decided we needed to fix his grave and put a marker on it. The day that we placed the stone on Ben's grave and the kids all ran to get flowers to plant, and Jeff Hart from Salem, Oregon is there juggling. It says Benjamin Ernest Linder, internationalist. It says that he was born, where and when he was born, and where and when he fell. La luz que encendió brillará para siempre. The light he lit will shine forever. And there's the unicycle with the dove that originated here in Portland, Oregon, thanks to Krista Higgins, my friend.
on April 24th, 1989, an evening of poetry, prose, and music called Remembering Ben was held at the Ann Hughes Coffee House in Portland, Oregon. The following audio excerpts are all from Remembering Ben, which marked the 2-year anniversary of Ben Linder's death. We begin with Ben Linder's brother, John Linder, reading an excerpt of Red, Black, and Green, written by Barbara Francis.
Just like what I saw of Ben when I visited him in Nicaragua in 1984, feeling lost myself and tagging along at his elbow, and everywhere people would say, "¿Qué tal, Benjamín?" And this is similar reaction from Barbara Francis, who worked with him at the National Energy Institute. I knew Ben through work. He was the Ben of the Mira and Ben story of a few months back. He was the one I had most clearly in mind when I spoke of U.S. citizens here who speak the language, love the people, and fearlessly work in the war zone. Mikos, my predecessor, had advised me to look for Ben when I came to Nicaragua, but Ben was out of the country when I arrived. Ben took a salary from INE, that's the Energy Institute, when he lived in Managua. I met him the first day he returned to the office. It was just before noon, and I tagged along with him to the commissary. I was then still quite baffled by everything and everyone, especially by the bad dream feeling of watching people open their mouths and make sounds that were very clearly words, but that had no meaning at all for me. People's reactions to Ben were unmistakable, however, whatever they were saying. When they spotted him, their eyes lit up. They grabbed his hand, they patted him. The meaning was clear. Where had he been? When had he gotten back? How long was he staying this time? I was writing a letter about Ben in a restaurant one day, and a man at the next table asked what I was writing. I told him, and his eyes filled with tears. The Nicaraguans have lost thousands and thousands of people in the war, but hundreds of Nicaraguans were crying at the ceremonies following Ben's death. It seemed incredible to me that they could have grieved the ship spare for one more, but Ben's death affected them just like it did us. After lunch, Ben escorted me up to his domain. The INE Planificación building, planning building, frankly speaking, is a deteriorating mess. An earthquake survivor that knew how to bend without breaking and shows it. Ben had the best office in the building to my eye, a huge rectangular room on the third floor with a bleary window wall down one long side. It was full of stuff. One reason the technological development has been so slow here, Ben said, is that there's no surplus and people have nothing to tinker with. He acted out tinkering. You have to have tinkerers, he said. He had plenty to tinker with, including a wonderful collection of tools that he'd drawn unto himself somehow. They weren't exactly his, but he protected them and carefully loaned them out. This is one of the things I might never have thought through had he not died, but Ben had a tool loaning act that amounted to wizardry. When third world countries technologized from scratch, in this case because so many of their former technologists left the country, people are often in over their heads and afraid to admit it. Sometimes they don't even know it. A great deal of physical damage can result, making them feel even worse and less confident. In the meantime, things get lost and broken and left out in the rain and so on. Ben and his tool hoard represented organization in the face of entropy and hope in the face of demoralization. Anyone could sidle into his domain and start chatting casually about maybe borrowing the big wrench. Ben would chat back. He was one of the least threatening souls on the planet. By the time the borrower left, maybe with a big wrench, maybe with something entirely different, he knew exactly what task he was hoping to do, exactly how to use the tool to do the task, how to avoid breaking the tool, and how to judge correctly when to give up. He went away confident and brought the tool back. It was technology transfer at its height. Ben was Jewish. I think that there is a Jewish theory of immortality, one I'm starting to believe in, that says that the dead live on literally in the personalities of those who remember them. Ben was loving and charming and soft-spoken and gifted. He had a knack for getting through to people even in the briefest encounters, for connecting. In the course of his peace activities here and in the U.S., he had met thousands of people. By his death, his spirit was released into all of those people, who who are now grief-stricken and furious. They will go on to do what Ben intended, not just for him, but with him. The Nicaraguans have a way of honoring their martyred dead by saying their names and shouting, presente, presente, presente. They mean the same thing. He is among the dead who will never die.
That was John Linder reading an excerpt of Red, Black, and Green, written by Barbara Francis. Next is a poem by Greg Kleiner called Turning Water into Light. It is read by John Adiego.
This poem is called Turning Water into Light. You went down deep into Nicaragua, a bruised bulge on the umbilical cord that connects twin continents, centuries, if ever, from equality. You brought nothing but your hands, your head, your fever-hot desire to help for people grow, like the corn and blood-colored coffee beans that push up thirsty and scared from her red soil. In the night's tar heat, you held her soft-boned babies who knew nothing of embargoes, but everything about hunger. You looked up at the same moon we see from here, the moon our country claimed with a stiff flag and footprints, then realized moon rocks weren't worth much, stardust only worked in fairy tales, and returned to milking our neighbors as ants, aphids. You tried to turn water into light, the light we notice only when a bulb flares white, then fades to black, to replace the orange tongues dancing in glassless windows, jack-o'-lantern eyes in the night. But the contra liked the dark. The soil your fingernails held in brick-colored crescents now holds you and thousands. But above, your adopted people wade on, waist deep against the current of nothing, trickling down the cord from the north. Their light, blown out by bullets we all owned, still burns. Thank you.
That was John Adiego reading a poem by Greg Kleiner. Another poet, Margot Fagri, also shared a poem about Ben Linder. It's entitled Trying to Understand and is read by the author.
Trying to understand. We gathered like fireflies at dusk, arriving in twos or threes, settling onto the hard brick plaza, sinking into the soft outlying grass. We were circles and circles of people, hollow inside. Disbelief, we would not see you again. At 7 o'clock, I woke to the jarring voice of the radio announcer. Ben Linder of Portland, a 27-year-old engineer, was killed today in Jinotega, Nicaragua. Yes, we knew always it was a possibility, but you had survived logging trucks peeling round coastal curves on your unicycle from BC to San Francisco, a trip none of us would have tried. You had arrived in Nicaragua and donned your clown's nose, joined the circus while waiting for your work visa. Things fell into place for you. Somewhere near the war front, Elizabeth said, when I called a year previously, asking how you were. Fear coated each word, but I trusted your invincibility, your rightness of action. Was it January when I watched you from the back of a crowded room? Your arms moving through air like a starfish beckoning. You talked of turbines and flywheels, showed slides of small electric plants built on rivers, and people you'd worked with, their faces alight. I felt distant, uncertain of direction, while you, 10 years younger, had blossomed into adulthood. I left without saying hello. I would not see you again. Did you know they would carry your name like a flag, Ben, create festivals and conferences, write poems, plays, even a book about your life? No, I said, no anecdotes come to mind. Just that he was young, sure of himself at 17, waiting on the train tracks at Trojan, speaking even then with his body. Did you know we would grieve for you as we had not for those in the land? Did you know you would grow bigger, Ben? Our fingers reach out, tracing the lines of your face, your words, feeling the imprint of your hands.
That was Margot Figri. Next, Jane Glazer shares an original poem.
On May 10th, 1987, there was a tree planting memorial in Chapman Park to which many of you came. A few days before that, the Nicaraguan dance troupe, Flor de Sacuanhoche, had performed. And this poem I wrote and read at that memorial ceremony. Las Palomas de Paz, Benjamin Presente. May Day in Portland, all bees and rhododendrons, the Flor de Sacuanhoche, Nicaraguan folkloric dancers, celebrated Ben. Their director, his friend, Rosalina Moreno, spoke of his brief life, his bravery, and joined us not to grieve, but to applaud his spirit, to think not of the grave, but of the resurrection. We do not ask for a moment of silence, she told us in soft Spanish. We want a moment of applause. And then that auditorium packed, chairs set up in all the aisles, the huge audience exploded, our hands clapping Ben's soul home. Pallbearers carried his small body to its rest, but we were juggling his soul. So huge and light, it seemed a beach ball or a circus balloon we could reach together, keeping it afloat there in that room. In the din that tried to match his spirit, a mirage of tears transformed the hands to wings, white wings of hope that beat against the night, the doves of peace that Ben has set in flight.
That was Jane Glazer reading Las Palomas de Paz. Next we hear Howard Glazer reading Letter from Managua, written by Reverend Paul Jeffrey and Reverend Linda Pierce. This letter originally appeared in a newsletter in Managua shortly after the construction of a memorial for Ben Linder.
His head thrown back with laughter, Ben Linder keeps on defying gravity and somehow stays atop his unicycle in a park just 4 blocks from our home in Managua. When we journey there with our 2-year-old son to play on the swings and teeter-totters, we always walk over to Ben, a rickety collection of junk metal welded together and rusting in the tropical humidity. The park around him bears his name. It's a fitting tribute, for Ben in life was always surrounded by children. We've told Lucas several times who Ben was and how he died. Lucas seems to understand a bit of the story. He often wants to climb onto Ben's metallic lap, then reach up and gently touch the side of Ben's head. Just under the automobile brake drum that forms his clown's crown, Lucas places his hand. We've explained to him that that's the place the Contras shot Ben at point blank range. Are we? Lucas says, serious and sympathetic. When the sculpture was first dedicated, we didn't think it would last long. A fragile contraption, there was no way it would withstand the assaults of both weather and children. And it didn't. Within weeks, it was teetering, almost toppled. The spokes of the unicycle were broken away. Ben was on the edge of collapse. But then, the next day, he was high in the saddle again, smiling away, the clown in the middle of the children. As that cycle of slow disintegration followed by sudden repair continued over the weeks that followed, we wondered who was taking responsibility. It seemed unnaturally efficient for a Nicaraguan government bureaucracy to accomplish. Paul learned the secret as he walked to the park one morning just at dawn. Three night watchmen, poor working class men who earn a few worthless cordobas to stay awake at night in front of an embassy and a cultural center that border on the park, walked through the dewy grass to contemplate a Ben in disrepair. Then they touched him. While one man held the unicycle, another grabbed Ben's head and pushed from behind. Slowly he was righted over the wheel. The men adjusted an arm here and a leg there, then stood back to consult thoughtfully. A few more pieces of scrap forcefully bent, and in 10 minutes, Ben looked, if not good as new, at least able to face another day. That sculpture has come to represent for us not just a martyred friend, but also the impoverished country he died for. Nicaragua, with its long heritage of poverty, violence, and natural disaster, eternally totters on the brink of devastation. Yet, with the help of friends and the poor's instinctive will to rebuild once again, it survives.
That was Letter from Managua, read by Howard Glazer. Next is a poem written and performed by Lloyd Marbet.
The poem that I want to read to you is a poem within a poem. The first part of the poem was written about Vietnam, about my perception of Vietnam. And the second part of the poem was written 2 days after Ben died. A poem is like the heart it grows, a requiem for Ben Linder. Someday, if you are quiet, and all around it is extra quiet too, you might hear the faint rat-tat-tat of bullets ricocheting off brains in some forgotten jungle. And if you are really extra quiet, you might not feel responsible. Behind the trigger, the arm of the grenade, lies human flesh, destroying human flesh. Behind the trigger, the arm of the grenade extends a trail of tears, rending organisms thrust into veins rich with the blood of peasants, victims victimizing victims, all in a flag's domination. Behind the trigger, the arm of the grenade lies our country bankrupt in its own agenda of death. Subversion in the name of democracy, contradistinctions of treachery, Swiss accounts transacting while human rights plead the fifth, for a president who no longer remembers each victim being dismembered. Poindexter's guilty, how about you? Ollie's follies on the 6 o'clock news. Behind the trigger, the arm of the grenade, a gentle man has fallen in the name of our own demise. And how much closer it comes when the unknown dead are our sons and daughters, and the time to stop killing more precious. Someday, if you are quiet, and all around it is extra quiet too, you might hear the faint rat-tat-tat of bullets ricocheting off brains in some forgotten jungle, and if you are really extra quiet, you might not feel responsible.
That was Lloyd Marbet reading at Remembering Ben in Portland, Oregon in 1989. Next, we hear Tim Calvert read a short poem from the Benjamin Linder Brigade entitled Poem for Benjamin.
For every hope they shatter, we will dream too. For every flower they trample, we will plant 4. For every song they stifle, we will sing 6. For every political prisoner they take, we will free 8. For every Brigadista they kill, 10 will come.
The evening ended with Miriam and Elizabeth Linder reading a poem by Ernesto Cardenal.
In the tomb of the guerrilla fighter, I think of your body that has been falling apart beneath the earth, becoming soft dirt, humus once more, together with the humus of all the other humans who have existed or will exist on this small ball of the world, all of us together becoming the fertile earth of this planet Earth. And when the cosmonauts see this blue and pink ball in the black night, what they'll be seeing far away is your luminous tomb, your tomb and the tomb of everyone. And when extraterrestrials from some place see this point of light from the earth, they'll be seeing your tomb. And one day it will all be tomb, silent tomb. And then there will no longer be any living being on this planet, compañero. And afterwards, we'll fall apart more, we'll fly, atoms in the cosmos. And perhaps matter is eternal, brother, without beginning or end, or it has an end and starts again each time. Your love surely had a beginning, but has no end. And your atoms that were in the soil of Nicaragua, your loving atoms, that gave their life for love, you'll see, they'll be light. I imagine your particles in the vastness of the cosmos, like signs, like living posters. I don't know if I explain myself. What I know is that your name will never be forgotten and that presente will be shouted forever.
Thanks to the Linder family, to those activists who organized the conference in the spirit of Ben Linder in 1987, and the Remembering Ben event in 1989. And thanks to the KBOO volunteer field recorders who documented these events for future broadcast. Thank you for listening to Circle 8 Radio. We now air monthly on the first Wednesday of each month here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland. To listen to past work or contact us, go to kboo.fm/circle8radio or email circlearadio@gmail.com. Our next show will air May 2nd. Stay tuned for Hard Knock Radio.